Friday. 30% chance of showers. High 73, low 59. Right now, 55. Connect FM 93.5, 95.3.
He is a congressman. He's also a doctor. He is also president of the United States, or that's what he wants to be.
Uh-huh.
He's running for president of the United States. He is Congressman Ron Paul. Congressman, good morning.
Good morning. Nice to be with you.
Great to have you on. All right, you're in town for the speech at Huff Hall tonight. 4,000 people. The thing sold out in less than 10 minutes. There'll be people in line at 5, hoping people that hold tickets aren't coming. How in the world are you doing this? I mean, as far as excitement, you ever won a state yet? You're probably not going to win the nomination, but look at the generation of energy that you are creating in this race.
Yeah, there's really a disconnect. Emotionally, there's a disconnect, you know, within the campaign and for myself as well. Because, you know, if you look at it in a practical sense, well, you know, you're not getting the popular vote, and the spin is quite different than you'd hope. But then when we go out and campaign, there's so much energy and excitement and no desire at all to say, oh, okay, you're not doing so well, let's back off. I mean, the energy keeps coming, and I'm delighted, especially since the young generation certainly has a burden to bear. I mean, they're the ones who are getting the debt and no jobs. So it's a pretty important issue. So if somebody is interested in what I'm talking about, I guess I'll be there. And certainly we need another option than what we're hearing from the two major parties at this moment.
All right, what was your take on what happened in Alabama and Mississippi? Big night for Rick Santorum?
It certainly was. And we didn't campaign there, but we did poorly and probably would have, because there's a very, very strong sentiment in the hardcore Republican base that rejects this idea that we ought to quit these wars. And yet the majority of the American people want to quit these wars, so I think the Republicans are digging a hole for themselves. And Obama is going to come across once again like, I'm more peaceful, I'm more diplomatic, I'm more, more willing to end these wars, and his image is going to be what he did 4 years ago. The Republicans are going to be the wild hawks who want to just start more wars.
Mm.
So I see this as very bad, and the Deep South are very, very much involved in pro-war issues.
You know, when I first heard you speak out about this, Congressman Ron Paul, I was uncomfortable as well. The more you talk about it, the more I'm kind of paying attention. I'm worried about Israel. They're in the middle of a bad situation. I am worried about Israel. But as far as policemen of the world, it's really starting to resonate with me now.
Yeah. Well, even Israel's not, you know, they're not better off. They're worse off from our policy because, you know, we could prop up a guy like Mubarak in Egypt for a long time, spend $40 billion. But that just stirs up resentment. Finally, you know, he gets thrown out of office, and the Al-Qaeda is involved now, and they're cutting off fuel supplies to Israel. So Israel is suffering from this. We give more aid to Israel's enemy than we give to Israel. So you can't solve the problem by just giving more and more aid.
Mm-hmm.
I think Israel sacrifices too much by us telling them when they can fight, when they can defend their borders, and when they can devise their own peace treaties. And I think they're more vulnerable right now. There's a better discussion in Israel right now about what we should do about the Iranians and their nuclear weapon. Because the Mossad over there, both the former and the current leader of the Mossad, said, don't go start bombing Iran. It doesn't make any sense. It's going to make it worse for Israel. So I think there's a better discussion elsewhere than sometimes it is in this country. But I don't think that our policies tend to backfire on Israel.
What has changed? Ron Paul hasn't changed. You said in one of the debates, I think I've seen all 20 or however many there have been, but you said I'm consistent. You said the biggest misconception is you can't win. What has changed this time where it has resonated? When you've said the same things, I think it's a common sense approach. There's no question.
Yeah, a lot of people use that word. I say, why are you interested in what I'm saying? They say, well, it's common sense. It's not like it's esoteric, wild a philosophy that you can't understand. But I think what's happened, especially in the last 4 or 5 years, has been the economic crisis that we have, and the knowledge that the American people have that this is not ending, that the debt is the big burden. I mean, you cannot have a $200 billion deficit like we did in February every month. You know, this can't last. So people are recognizing that the financial crisis is very, very serious, and we can't bail out the world. But also, they're sick and tired of the wars. The war is part of the economic problem, the spending, and the foolishness that goes on in the 10, 12 years that we've been over there. It makes no sense. The American people finally are coming around to believing it.
Can we win? What does winning in Afghanistan even mean?
There's no way we can win. All we can do is lose. You know, I was in the military in the 60s, and it was always, you know, Nixon was elected to stop the war, and 30,000 men died after that. And they said, well, we can't be embarrassed. We can't lose. So they keep more people dying and dying, and finally we lose, and we left, and things are much better now. And it's the way it will be in Afghanistan. You'd think we'd have learned something. And, you know, ironically, it's known as the graveyard of empires. It just recently did in the Soviet Union. Now, it's going to do us in. I mean, our greatest threat is domestic, and it's economic, and attack on our personal liberties at home. Nobody's going to invade us. This whole idea this has something to do with national security is a complete falsehood.
There you go again, Ron Paul. The more I hear you speak, the more I like you. And I don't, after a while, you're going, wait a minute, I kind of like what he says. Okay, what fixes Washington and politics in general? It's a mess. I don't think anybody would contest that. What do we do over the long haul?
Well, there's only one thing you have to do, because the answers are there. The explanation why we're here is we've had too many people who went to Washington, did not take their oath of office seriously, and did whatever they wanted and ignored the rule of law, went to war without declaration, printed money when they weren't allowed, have an entitlement system that is not authorized. So if you had only people who would go to Washington who obeyed the Constitution, this would be reversed in a short period of time. But that won't happen. Even the people there in Washington will respond properly. If the people finally say, okay, you know, this doesn't work, we want you to do such and such, or we're going to throw you out of office. So the people have a lot to do with it. The people we send there should be able to stand up against this. But unfortunately, the momentum is still power. Power is what determines everything in Washington, because policies don't change. We have Republicans in. They spend money. They expand the medical system. They expand the Department of Education. You put in the Democrats, and they even do it worse, and they don't end the wars. They expand the wars. So this is why the American people are so disgusted. So you need a whole different attitude about what the role of government ought to be. So this is why we talk about an intellectual revolution that we need, similar to what we had in our early history. And I think it's coming, but it's never fast enough for some of us.
Yeah, Republican presidential candidate and Congressman Ron Paul for just a few more minutes. Term limits, would that help at all? I'm a big term limits guy. I don't know if that would.
Well, I've supported them, and I probably introduced the first ones even in the 1970s. I voted for all of them, but I don't think it's a panacea, because I've seen a lot in Washington, or at least several individuals who voluntarily went term limit and followed their promises, but they left, and a lot of times the person who replaced them were worse than the people who were there. So it's what people believe in that's more important than just having turnover. But I think anything right now to disrupt the power system up there would make a big difference. But it's not going to happen. There's no real sentiment for now. In the 90s, when the Republicans took over, there was, and that's when we had the votes. But we didn't even come close to passing it.
If it's not you, Congressman, will you support the GOP nominee, or does it depend who gets it?
It sure depends on what they talk about. If they convince me they're going to end the war, and that they understand something about the Federal Reserve, and they care about curtailing the power of the Patriot Act and reversing some of these ideas, like the military can arrest American citizens and held in secret without trial, that has to be addressed. If they don't address that, I'd have a lot of trouble.
Certainly, you're going to have a platform and some power from which to speak. Certainly, would you consider a vice presidential spot if it were to come open?
I doubt if they would offer it to me, and it would take some serious thinking. They'd have to convince me that, I wouldn't have to object to everything they were doing. That wouldn't be much fun.
Yeah, but look who you bring. Look at Huff Hall tonight and see the energy. You're seeing it every place you go. If you bring all of that, what's wrong with that?
Yeah, that's a good argument, and it's interesting that they keep talking about the importance of the youth vote and the people that I talk to. At the same time, they know I'm not getting that many votes in the primary, and so I think they understand what you're saying, that there is a generation. And matter of fact, we do the best with independent votes. If you study these votes, when we compete, we generally win independent votes and the youth vote. That's a lot of people. Mm. And then when you talk now about the anti-war vote, that's 60-some percent of the people.
Well, you're getting
there is a segment out there that are very powerful.
Well, you're getting Democrats crossing over because of your stance there. There's no question about it. And if you bring the youth vote, if it's that important, then they can't say you're too old. Look at you.
Right.
I want to know.
You're right.
I want to know what you eat. I want to be like you. How do you do what you do? I mean, this is a grind. How do you do this?
Well, I try to take care of myself, but
it's amazing.
The whole thing is these people that come out and all this energy, it is made up of a lot of Democrats and independents, and they don't feel comfortable voting in these Republican primaries. I think that's part of the disconnect that we're facing.
Well, because what you have is you have the people, the establishment, going to say, well, you got to get Florida, and you got to get Marco Rubio. What about Ron Paul getting all the young guys and the independent guys? Wouldn't that tip it to absolutely assuring the Republican Party and ticket? But again, you'd have to get along with whoever the top of the ticket is, and right now, I don't know who you align with. Maybe Newt a little more than the others? I don't know.
You know, he goes back and forth, but lately he has sounded like he's softened some of his stands, about militancy, and I think he has a little different approach. So I don't know. It's a tough choice.
Well, listen, what you've done is you've energized the base that the President Obama energized in 2008. It belongs to Ron Paul. There's no doubt about it. I guess people are going to start standing in line at 5 o'clock, hoping ticket holders don't show up so they can get in to see. I told them they should have had it at the Assembly Hall, which holds 16,000. You might.
Oh, well, no, that's getting a little too optimistic. But it is amazing. It still amazes me when I go there, but I do my best to give them a message.
Well, listen, congratulations on what you're doing. I think it's an important voice in this campaign. Do you plan to go all the way to Tampa?
I think so because, even like yesterday, how poorly we did when you looked up the total votes. We ended up getting some delegates. We got some delegates out of Hawaii. And if it's a real close race, at the convention, several hundred delegates might make a big difference.
And I bet your wife, Carol, still rolls her eyes about her active husband, huh? I mean, wow. You guys, 54 years is what I understand. Is that how many years?
You're 55. And,
Well, and plus, I have a wonderful wife, 4 kids, including triplets. So when I knew you were a baby doctor, I said, God bless you. I love you. Anyway, Ron Paul, congratulations. Keep going. Keep the fight. And great to have you in town here for tonight's talk. It'll be packed full. It'll be fun to see. And keep up your good work. Thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me on.
Congressman Ron Paul, presidential candidate, and Congressman Ron Paul, hope you enjoyed our visit. What a common sense.
Oh, yeah.
When we talk to Mike Ditka and Johnny on Fridays, that's what it comes down to. It's common sense, and a lot of what he says makes so much sense now.
Yeah.
And it hasn't been that he's changed his message. It's just after a while you start realizing, well, maybe he's right. Some of this stuff, maybe, what can we do about XYZ? He says follow the Constitution. Listen, the stuff's resonating. When we did that vote around this county, Ron Paul got the most votes.
I know that.